You're listening to Radio Berkman from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. You can find show notes for this episode and more programs like this at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman.
Did you hear the news? I'm going to make records.
No kidding!
The recorded music industry takes on music piracy using a number of different tactics. The big legal fights against individual file sharers always get the front page, but record labels are also experimenting with new business models, fighting for legislation to take down file sharing sites, and trying their hand at public awareness campaigns, like this one that just hit YouTube last week.
I'm Gilbert Gottfried here, talking to you about piracy and illegal downloading. Look at it this way. You're working a lemonade stand, and some other guy is like sticking a tube out, sucking the lemonade, and handing it out for free, and you're sitting out in the sun all day, and you're not making a f***ing nickel. That's what we're talking about. So don't download.
Just a note to record labels planning a public awareness campaign, Gilbert Gottfried ranks just below Steve Urkel and Fran Drescher on the annoying voices spectrum. Perhaps the high point, or the low point, depending on your point of view, of the Recording Industry Association of America's litigation campaign against individual non-commercial file sharers is the case of Whitney Harper, the so-called innocent infringer. Ms. Harper's case is now pending possible review in the Supreme Court of the United States. Kiwi Camara, who represents Ms. Harper, visited with Professor Charles Nesson at the Berkman Center to discuss what the case is all about.
Tell us what the case is. What is Harper?
Harper was a 16-year-old cheerleader from San Antonio who downloaded music online using Kazaa and Morpheus and admitted to it. She was sued as part of the recording industry's campaign to sue individuals for downloading music online. There are more than 10,000 of those cases around the country, and she was sued in San Antonio. Actually, initially, her dad was sued because the way the recording industry investigates these cases, they send someone, it's a company called Media Sentry, onto Morpheus or Kazaa or whatever, and that person sees who is offering what songs. They download the songs from that person, and then they do something very easy called packet tracing, packet sniffing, where you see the IP address from which the download is coming. And then they go to Comcast and all the ISPs and subpoena their records for who that IP address was assigned to at the time of the download. So they followed this procedure in this case, and they discovered the Harper family, and they sued Steve Harper, who was Whitney's dad. So over the course of litigation, Whitney admitted that it was her and eventually agreed to an injunction and demanded only that she receive minimum statutory damages as opposed to maximum statutory damages or high statutory damages. And so the range we're talking about for willful infringement, it's $750,000 to $150,000. And for what's called innocent infringement, the minimum is reduced to $200, and that's per copyrighted work. So if you download 1,000 songs, it's $200,000. If you download, more than that, it's times 200. Now, the recording industry, when they bring these cases, they target people who've typically downloaded hundreds or thousands of songs, but they never sue for hundreds or thousands of songs. They pick 20 or 30 songs, and they do this presumably so as to keep the damages, reasonable. So that if a jury awards $80,000 per song, it's not $80,000 per song times 10,000 songs, it's $80,000 times 20 songs. This is their idea of taking pity on people. In the district court, Whitney agrees on everything except whether or not she can be an innocent infringer. She contends that she is an innocent infringer because when she was 16, she didn't know that Morpheus and Kazaa were different from, say, Pandora. She thought they were just ways of listening to music online and was not aware that they were unlawful, did not understand how file sharing networks worked, and so wanted a jury trial on whether she qualified for the innocent infringer defense and so could lower the minimum from $750 to $200. The recording companies said, no, you can't do that. There's a statute that says you can't be an innocent infringer when we stamp a certain notice on the published copies of our music, and we do that. So the CDs in the record store bear our notice, and everyone has access to CDs. Everyone knows that CDs bear this notice, and therefore you can't be an innocent infringer. They moved for summary judgment and lost in the district court. The district court said, you either accept a settlement of $750, the ordinary minimum, or we will have a trial on the issue of innocent infringement. So from there, it goes up to the Fifth Circuit, which reverses and says that as a matter of law, when the record companies have stamped the CDs with this notice, no one can be an innocent infringer whether or not they knew that their activity on the internet was or was not infringing. Whitney's response, of course, is that she didn't use any CDs in the course of her infringement. She downloaded and distributed digital files on Kazaa that did not bear any such notice. And so whether or not the recording companies put this notice on their CDs has absolutely no bearing on her mental state. So she may or may not be an innocent infringer, but that's for a jury to decide upon hearing her testimony and seeing what went on in Morpheus, seeing what the notices were, seeing what the state of information was when she was 16 at the time she engaged in this infringement. Now, the other interesting thing about the Harper case, in most of these cases, the recording industry will offer a settlement of $3,000 to $12,000 as soon as or right before they sue you. And if this happens to you, I recommend you pay the settlement because there's no way that you can afford a good lawyer in federal court to litigate these issues all the way through for less than, you know, $100,000 to do a good job. So unless you're one of the kind of lucky people that has the benefit of the students working for Joel, and even then, you know, Joel will tell you it may or may not be worth the fight. It's a thing I think you do because you believe in it, not because it's kind of the rational thing to do. So anyway, what is unusual about Whitney's case is that she had a paid lawyer in the district court and in the Fifth Circuit who did a good job of kind of framing these issues and who put together the case so that it is the way I described it to you. It presents cleanly this issue of innocent infringement. It is the only issue in the case at this point, and so it's kind of the perfect kind of case that you want to present to the Supreme Court, which is what we did. And so we filed a petition for certiorari asking the court to review the question whether a notice that a work is copyrighted must appear on the copy of the work that is used for the infringement in order to bar the innocent infringement defense, or whether, as the recording industry contends, it need only appear on the widely distributed, officially published copies of the work, in this case, the CDs.
What would you say is the significance?
You're listening to a conversation between Kiwi Kamara, counsel for Whitney Harper in her bid to reach the Supreme Court of the United States, and Charles Nesson. Professor Nesson is representing another file-sharing defendant, Joel Tenenbaum.
...of the case.
Well, I think, number one, it's the Supreme Court's only opportunity to address the RIAA litigation campaign against individuals. There are two other cases which are coming up the pipeline, Joel's case here in Massachusetts and the Jamie Thomas case in Minnesota, but those cases are still, for all practical purposes, in the district court. There have been no Court of Appeals opinions in either case. So I think that the court, once it takes this case, will not be kind of, you know, the Supreme Court is not doesn't limit itself really to the record once it's taken the case. So I think the significance is an opportunity for the court to make pronouncements about what the recording industry has done, namely launch a kind of industry-wide campaign against individuals using the full process of the federal courts to intimidate them into paying these kinds of settlements. And that's important because all kinds of other people are doing it now. People are doing it for movies, just like the recording industry did it for music. There's a law firm in Virginia that's been suing individuals, and that has a giant subpoena lawsuit, I think, still pending in the D.C. District Court. And there's a company called Right Haven, which is taking newspaper articles, you know, posted on the online version of the Las Vegas Sun or some paper like that, and suing blogs that have copied the Las Vegas Sun articles and extracting settlements of, again, you know, $3,000 to $12,000 merely because these people don't want to litigate in court, and rationally don't want to litigate in court, because even if they have some kind of defense, it would cost more to assert that defense in court than simply to pay off the Righthaven people. And it's going on around the world. In the UK, porn companies are getting on the bandwagon and are suing these free porn sites on the internet using the same kind of theory. So this is the recording industry has set up a precedent. There is now an event going on, which is that industries are using copyright and the threat of process in the federal courts to extract settlements from people and to alter the freedom they feel to do things on the internet. And the question is, what will be done about it in a kind of a broad sense? And I think the case is important because it's the court's first opportunity to address that, in this case, through the kind of doctrinal lens of innocent infringement.
And perhaps the last opportunity.
That's right. That's right.
Thomas and Tenenbaum, that's like the end of the line.
It's a while away. And then, you know, these other cases, there's the downside of these cases is they don't get litigated. That's, you know, that's the great benefit of this strategy. And it was thought up by a very fine lawyer, Matt Oppenheim. He was a partner at Jenner and Block. You know, the recording industry came to him and said, look, this is a gigantic problem. And he led the campaign. You know, he sued Napster, he sued Aimster, he sued Grokster, and then he sued individuals. And he's a very smart guy. And, you know, personally, he's easy to get along with. But he's a good lawyer, and he came up with this. And the great benefit of this strategy is there's no one to defend the cases because it's not worth paying the cost of defense. I mean, he's really taking advantage of the fact that it is very difficult to litigate effectively in the federal courts. So it's you know, people who do this pro bono that really put up whatever defense there's going to be.
We spoke with Whitney Harper, and when I say we, I mean Joel and I. And Joel asked her about her state of mind at the time. Her answer was really quite marvelous. First of all, she described herself as 14. And I guess that must have been when this...
The downloading happened. As opposed to the...
Yeah. And she seemed, at least to me, completely credible in really not being sophisticated at that point, either about the computer, about downloading and copying and caching and all of that, or about copyright law.
Hello?
Hi, Whitney.
Yes.
Hi, it's Charlie Nesson.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm actually here in the Berkman Center, sitting next to Joel Tenenbaum. Joel, say hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Whitney, tell us, if you would, how you're feeling about your current situation in the Supreme Court.
Excited. Especially with what the president of the RIAA has said himself, I feel that it would be a really good opportunity to go there and we could really make a point and show people what exactly is going on and what everybody's had to go through because of all of these lawsuits.
Well, you know, you sent me his quotes, and they are stunning, I have to say.
I was shocked whenever I saw that.
Let me just read them. The lawsuits were obviously controversial in the media, but the reality was that most people had no idea of what they were doing was illegal at the time of those lawsuits. This is Carrie Sherman, the head of the RIAA. We did all sorts of surveys. We tried PR firms. We did everything to look at how to begin to change the culture of using illegal P2P. We realized that one, none of the messages resonated, and two, most people had no idea that what they were doing was illegal, let alone thought it was wrong. That's extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. And what's funny about it is that everything they've said is that I should have known and that my age didn't matter. And if he's saying that no one knew what they were doing was wrong, how was I supposed to know at 14? I was barely in high school that I was doing anything wrong or illegal. So it's pretty shocking. But I'm glad that he said that, and I hope that we get a chance to show that to the Supreme Court so that they can understand that what my whole defense is me being completely honest, not trying to get away with something that I did at all.
So, Whitney, I'm kind of curious because back at the time, it wasn't like I had this notion of downloading as being this thing, you know, as illegal as like going into like a store and stealing like a CD or something. Like, I had the notion that it was illegal, but I also had the notion that, you know, underage drinking or like jaywalking was illegal. I just figured it to be an illegal thing that no one took seriously. Did you think it was outright and completely legal? What was your understanding at the time?
What's funny about it is now, whenever I talk about it, now I know all of this, so I, you know, had to put myself back in that age that I was in, but I had no idea that I was file sharing anything. I didn't know, I mean, like, I knew that I was listening to the music, but I didn't think of it as, like, I didn't think of it as stealing. I didn't think of it as me taking something. I was just listening to it as if I was just listening to it. I had no idea that I was taking from somebody or essentially distributing it to somebody else, and it should be paid for. I had no idea.
You didn't even realize you were distributing it. So you really are innocent in the most thorough sense of the word.
Yeah, I really didn't know. I had no idea at all. I just knew that I was listening to, like, my friends would come over and we'd be playing on the computer and we'd be listening to the most popular songs of the time. That was all it was to me. I had absolutely no idea that anybody was, well, that I was doing anything wrong and that anybody was getting it from me. I had no clue that I was distributing it to anybody out there. I had no idea.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're a poster child for innocence. Wow.
Well, good luck, Whitney. I think you've got a great case, and
I hope so.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed, because I think that we have a really good chance if we can get there.
All right. Great, Whitney. Lovely to talk with you.
Y'all have a good afternoon.
Bye-bye.
She really represented herself as basically just listening to the radio, except this was like listening to the internet. For me, was powerful in exemplifying what seems obviously to be the innocent category in the statutory damage structure. The categories are innocent on the bottom, willful on the top. But the question then is, what's in the middle? And Joel described himself as, well, I knew that the copyright law was telling me I shouldn't do this, but I thought it was like jaywalking or, you know, not a terribly serious offense. And here he is not doing his downloading and sharing to make money or to maliciously damage anybody. And it would seem like Joel embodies the middle category. Joel, in fact, is not a willful infringer. Willful has been defined in his case to make him willful,
right.
But he should be in that middle category where he's not innocent. All right, that gets you out of the bottom category up to the middle category. But he's not malicious and venal.
Right.
He's not willful.
The question is whether willful means only knowing.
Yes.
Joel may have been knowing, but he wasn't willful.
That's what I believe.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court will shortly tell us whether it will grant Whitney Harper's petition for certiorari and review her case. Joel Tenenbaum's case is presently pending appeal in the First Circuit Court of Appeals. You can share any thoughts you might have about this episode. Just drop us a tweet. Our handle is Radio Berkman. This episode was brought to you this week by Charles Nesson, along with myself, with special thanks to guests Joseph Tenenbaum, Whitney Harper, and Kiwi Kamara from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.